Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Psachim Daf Mem Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the top of Daf Mem Tes at the Mishnah. Before we begin the Mishnah, we glance at the side. We have our topic heading under the word no say, the topic heading, and we've written Yud Dalet, the 14th of Nisan, Shechal Yosber of Shabbos, that came out on a Friday, that came out on a Shabbos, that is, Mosai Mevarim Es HaChometz. When is the Chometz to be destroyed? So that what you, generally speaking, we burn Chometz Erev Pesach, the 14th of Nisan. Our Mishnah is going to present a scenario where the 14th of Nisan comes out on a Shabbos. So, obviously, we won't burn chometz on Shabbos. When then will we get rid of our chometz? So the Mishnah, our boss so shechalios b'Shabbos, the 14th of Nisan that comes out on a Shabbos, mevarin es hakul mifnei haShabbos, divrei Rabbi Meir. One is going to get rid of, destroy all of his chometz except for that which he leaves over for his Shabbos meals. He will get rid of all of his chometz on Friday, which call this Friday the 13th. It's Friday the 13th of Nisan. Now, Rabbi Meir says, Mevarin Sakol, we'll see shortly, as opposed to the other opinion that we see in the Mishnah, Sakol means not only regular food, common food known as chulin, but also truma is to be rid of at that time as well. Now, truma is the tithe that one separates from his produce and is given to a kohen. And generally speaking, truma must be treated with a certain level of sanctity. One is not allowed to defile it, and one is not allowed to wantonly destroy it either. Here, however, we're dealing with the need to get rid of it, the truma that is chometz, before Pesach. And as we said, you can't do it on the official day, on the 14th, so we roll back one day on the 13th. V'chachomim omrim bizmanoi. Chachomim say that you don't get rid, you're not obligated to get rid of the chometz on the 13th on Friday, but you will get rid of it on Shabbos itself. Now, of course, you're not going to burn it, but that isn't the only way to mevayer chometz. Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Tzodok, Omer, truma mlifnei haShabbos v'chulin bizmanon. The truma that one will get rid of on Friday. However, the chulin, the common food, that is on Shabbos itself. Now, how, you'll ask, how do you get rid of things on Shabbos? So there are ways, whether it be crumbling the truma, the food, and tossing it into the wind. That's a way, and there might be other methods as well. We take a look at Rashi. Truma milifnei haShabbos, on the third line from the top, Rashi says she'eno yochol la'achila. Truma cannot be given lo lezorim v'lo behemas azorim. It can't be given to non kohanim nor to their animals. Ulashoy soyevshar, to leave it, to delay it, keep it around, that's impossible. Therefore, you have to get rid of the truma on Friday. Avol chulin ain't soch levayer el bezmano. Chulin, however, you aren't obligated to get rid of it until the 14th. Shiocho limtso lohen ochlem harbe, between Friday and the morning hours of Shabbos, you will find a lot of people to eat it. So there's no pressure. There's no pressure to rid yourself of the chulin any earlier, as opposed to the truma, which Rashi pointed out, there are limited people who can actually eat it, so you don't want it hanging around. So get rid of it while you still can. The Gemara. Tanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok Omer, he, by the way, was featured in the Mishnah as well. Pamachas Shovas Abo B'Yavne, on one occasion, Abot, Rabbi Tzadok, spent Shabbos in the city of Yavne, V'chal Arbo Asolios B'Shabbos, and it was a case where the 14th of Nisan, Erev Pesach, came out on a Shabbos. Ubo Zunin, Zunin is a name, Ubo Zunin, Memune Shel Rabbi Eliel, and this gentleman who is the he was appointed over the household of Rabbi Gamliel, the Omar Higia Ace Levire Es HaChometz, and he announced the time, the hour of the day has arrived during which we must get rid of the Chometz. V'alachti achar Abba, and I followed Father, Ubi'anu Es HaChometz. And as we saw in the Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok acknowledges the destruction or the nullification of Chometz taking place on Shabbos itself. That, of course, he was referring to Chulin. The Mishnah. Haholech, one who on the 14th of Nisan goes and is on his way to do a couple of things. We'll see in this Mishnah, we've used a diamond to highlight the phenomenon of his remembering something. There are two cases in this Mishnah where things were forgotten and then he remembered. The first part is related to our issue of chometz. Person forgot that he had chometz and then remembered that he had it in his house. The second part of the Mishnah, you'll see a situation where a person remembered that he had with him some sacrificial meat. That will become clearer as we go along. So in the first part of the Mishnah, one is on his way on the 14th of Nisan, Lishchot es pischo v'lomul es benoi v'lechol sudas erus beveis chomiv. There are three examples are cited here in this part of the Mishnah. He's on his way to slaughter the Korban Pesach. Obviously, this is a Mishnah dealing with the time of the Beis HaMikdash. So a man on the 14th of Nisan is on his way to slaughter the Korban Pesach. The Pesach was slaughtered in the afternoon hours of the 14th of Nisan. By that time, one is not to have had any chometz in his position. As the Pesach itself says, Lo sishchar al chometz dam zivchi, that the Korban cannot be slaughtered by a person who still owns chometz. So a person is on the 14th of Nisan and he's on his way to slaughter the Korban Pesach v'lomul es beno, or he's on his way to circumcise his son v'lechol sudas erusin beis chomev, or he's on his way to a meal that is associated with a person entering into the entering to the first stage of marriage, which is called Erusin. Erusin is the stage of marriage where a man presents something of value to a woman and she accepts it, that thereby making her an Arusa, a form of a married, she has a married married status at that point, and a meal was made on that occasion. So a man was on his way to a Sudas Erusin, an Erusin meal, but based some of it is in his father-in-law's place. And he remembers that he has chometz in his house. If he has enough time to go back home and destroy the chometz, and then go back on his way to the mitzvah, so that is what he should do. V'im lav, and if that is not the case, then Mevatlo Belibo, then he shall simply nullify it in his heart. And we continue. Another section, that's why we have this Mishnah broken down into Roman numerals. Section 2, he's on his way, Lahatzil min hagoyim, or min hanochrim, umin hanohor, umin alistim, umin hadleko, min amapoilis. This person is on a rescue mission. He's on his way to save Jews that are being pursued by Gentiles, or save someone who's drowning in a Noah river, or from armed bandits, or Daleko is a fire, Minamapo, someone who had been victimized by an avalanche. So if you are on saving mission, then don't go back home. That's not even an option. Just mevatel the chometz where you are, even if you had enough time to go back home. Number three, velishbois shvisas horoshus. If a person was on his way to the edge of his tchum, so it's the 14th of Nisan, and this person has in mind that on Pesach day he wants to extend his tchum an additional 2,000 amas in a particular direction, and what he plans to do is to spend to be present as soon as Pesach enters, to be present at that point at which he's koina a new shvisa. So that means for argument's sake, a person can, generally speaking, walk 2,000 amas in all directions around the community in which he lives. But this person wants to extend his walking rights an additional 2,000 amas beyond his normal distance. So he would go to the edge of the 2,000 amma mark from town and wait there till Yom Tov set in, thereby acquiring that as his Yom Tov location, enabling him to walk another 2,000 amas further from that point. So he's on his way to that. However, and his whole purpose in extending his tchum is what is called shvisas or reshus, for some type of optional reason. That itself, by the way, is a bit of a discussion found in the Tosfos, because we have learned in Maseches Eruvin that an Eruv Tchumen is made only Lidvar Mitzvah. But for our purposes, he is on his way to extend his Tchum for something of an optional nature. Yachzor Miad. For that, we say, no, you've got to go back home and destroy the Chometz. V'chein mi shiyotza miyushalayim. V'nizkar shiyesh biyodu basar kodesh. A person left Jerusalem. Yushalayim is considered the precinct or the boundary in which one can eat kodshim kalim, sacrificial meat associated with lighter level sacrifices. Kodshim are limited to the Beis HaMikdash, and those are eaten only by Kohanim. But for our purposes, we're talking here about a korban shlomim, for example, that one has the right to eat it within Yerushalayim. However, we have a case here where a person left Yerushalayim, v'nizkar sheyesh biyado basar kodesh, and he remembered that he had in his possession some sacrificial meat. Im ovar tzofim, sorfoi b'makoymoi. If he passed tzofim, there's a machlokis Rashi and Tosfos as to what tzofim is. According to Rashi, it's a specific location outside Yerushalayim. Now, many of you may know that Yerushalayim is surrounded by hills, and from this point, according to Rashi, from this point, you can see the Beis HaMikdash. So if you passed tzofim comes word litzpos or tzofia, tzofe is a word meaning to see. So if you passed the place called Sofim, according to Rashi, according to Tosfos, it really is a reference to any place around Yerushalayim from which you can see the Beis HaMikdash. So if you pass that point called Sofim, Sorfo b'mekomo, then the meat that you have, the sacrificial meat that you have with you, burn it where you are. Now, the meat has become posel by virtue, posel means it's become unfit by virtue of the fact that you left the walls of Yerushalayim. So you don't have much to do with the meat other than to burn it. The only question is, where do you burn it? So if you passed the location called Sofim, burn it where you are. V'im lav, if you haven't passed the Sofim boundary, then chozer v'sofer lifnei habira me'atzei morcho, then you go back to the Bira. Some explanations of Bira is the Beis HaMikdash, and burn it in the Beis HaMikdash using the wood, the Atzei HaMaroch, that's wood that's dedicated to the Mizbeach. The Ad Kamo Hein Chozrin, quantity wise, when we speak about how much, we said that if you remember you have, whether it's Chometz or Basar Kodesh, you have to go back. Well, how much do you have in order to be obligated to go back? Rabbi Meir Omer, Zevzeh Bekebeitza, whether it's the Shub Chometz or Basar Kodesh, an egg quantity. Rabbi Yudah Omer, Zevzeh Bekezayas. Rabbi Yudah says, in both cases, the return for burning the Chometz or the return for burning the Basar Kodesh is if it is an olive quantity. V'chachomim omrim basar kiddush b'kezayis v'chometz b'kebeitza. V'chomim make a distinction. When it comes to the sacrificial meat, then it's, even if there is just an olive quantity that you have in your possession, then if you haven't passed sofim, you'd have to go back. And chometz, though, is only if you have a larger amount, an egg quantity of chometz, then you would be obligated to go back to your house to burn the chometz. Tosfos points out why the difference, why in the case of Besar Kiddush are we machmir in requiring return even for such a small shear. So the Tosfos, the Riva, quotes the Rishami, says that since Besar Kiddush has no other solution, namely nullification, so we are machmir that if you have a kezayis, you have to go back. But chometz, which can be nullified, so we aren't machmir on the person until he has such a large quantity as an egg quantity worth of chometz. We now start the Gemara. Before we learn the actual text, we glance at the side under our No Say heading. Haholech l'sudas erusin. Person is on his way to this marriage meal. V'nizgar b'chometz. Ha'im yesh lachzor miyad. And he remembers that he has chometz. All of this, of course, is taking place on the 14th of Nisan. Does he have to go back immediately? Well, we had mentioned in our Mishnah that if he was on his way to Sudas Erisin, so he doesn't have to go back immediately unless he has enough time to do that. V'rominu, we raise a contradiction. Ha'holech echol Sudas Erisin v'veis chomiv lishbos shvisos rishus yachzor miyad. Now if you follow our markings, you see Sudas Erisin is mentioned here, and we have an arrow to the right-hand side of the text. You can align this with the arrow above, where you see Sudas Erisin was also mentioned in the Mishnah. And in this source that the Gemara is raising as a contradiction, it says, Yachzor Miyad, he has to go back immediately. In other words, he stops dead in his tracks and goes right back. The Mishnah didn't say that. Omar of Yochanan, Lo Kashya, Harab Yudo, Harab Yossi. The two sources are not contradictory, they simply represent two different opinions. One of Rabbi Yehuda and one of Rabbi Yossi Desanya, Sudas Erisin, the Suda of marriage. Rishus, the Sudas Erisin is considered an optional type event, and therefore the source that says Yachzor Miyad will apply. He has to go back immediately to burn the chometz. He's not jeopardizing something of such significance if he reverses his trip that was to a Sudas Erisin. The whole Sudas Erisin is viewed simply as something merely optional. Rabbi Yossi Omer Mitzvah. Rabbi Yossi says that Sudas Erisin is categorized as a mitzvah. Therefore, only if he has enough time to go back, destroy the chometz, and get back on his trip and make it to that Sudas Erisin, fine. But otherwise, we don't expect him to go back home because he, according to Rabbi Yossi, is on his way to do a mitzvah. The Gemara now introduces another approach to these two sources, our Mishnah and the Rominhu source the Gemara introduced, as follows. V'hashta d'yom Rav Chisda, and now that Rav Chisda has introduced the following, Machloikis v'su'uda shni'a v'su'uda rishona divrei akol mitzvah. The machlokis we saw between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi is only with regard to what's called the second meal, the Suda Shnia. After the Erusin, after this initial marriage stage takes place and they have a meal, there was at times those that the chosan, the groom, would send gifts to the bride, and along with his sending the gifts, they would have a second meal. And that's the Suda Shnia. So the machloikis that we saw between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi was only with regard to the Suda Shnia. Rabbi Yehuda calling that optional, and Rabbi Yossi calling that a mitzvah. Aval suda besuda rishona divrei hakol mitzvah. As far as the first meal they have in honor of the erusin, the marriage, everyone agrees that is a mitzvah. Now that Rav Chista has said that, afilu teima hava harabuda, we can say the two sources, our Mishnah and the Veraminu source, are both authored by the same Tana, namely Rabbi Huda, the lo kashya, and still there is no difference. Ha besuda rishona, that would be the Bryce, the source that said yachzor miyad. That's with regard to the suda rishona. That's the significant meal that even Rabbi Huda would classify as a mitzvah. And ha besuda shniya, that which Rabbi Huda says yachzor miyad. Let us just again clarify this. Let's restate this velo kashya. We didn't point out that the triangles here are the resolutions to the stira. That may be obvious. So velo kashya ha besuda rishona. Then we say he doesn't have to go back to do the burning of the chometz. That's the Mishnah. And the suda shnia, where it says he has to go back immediately, that's the suda shnia. In other words, we're not that concerned that he makes it to that, being that he has chometz in his possession. So with regard to the suda shnia, we would say yachzor miyad. Tanya, Omar Rabbi Huda, ani lo shomati. Rabbi Huda says, I did not hear that the meal is considered a mitzvah ela sudas erusin. That's only with regard to the initial meal that they have surrounding, concerning, or in connection with the marriage, initial marriage stage, erusin, aval loi savlonos, but not the meal that they have where gifts, savlonos are gifts that the groom sends to the arusa, to his new wife. Omar lo Rabbi Yossi, ani shomati sudas erusin v'savlonis. Rabbi Yossi says that even the sudas savlonis, in addition to the sudas erusin, is considered a mitzvah. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Omer, kol su'udo she'eno shel mitzvah, any meal that's not mitzvah related, ein talmud chacham rashoi lenos mimeno, a Torah sage is not allowed to benefit from it. Kegon mai, what would be an example of that, of a meal that's not a sudas mitzvah? So Omer Rabbi Yochanan, kegon bas kohen liYisrael. Number two, ubas talmid chacham leam haaretz. Example of, we'll classify this as an undesirable type marriage. When we say undesirable, we're not suggesting that there is a violation of a Torah prohibition. That would be an outright avera. Here we're saying it's a marriage, but it's not something that's desirable, thereby rendering the meal surrounding such a marriage as a non-mitzvah. The example cited by the Gemara was the daughter of a Kohen marrying a non-Kohen. There will be much more on this topic as the page unfolds. And the second example is the daughter of a Talmud Chacham who marries an Am Haaretz. Am Haaretz is an ignoramus. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, now the Gemara elaborates on this. Rabbi Yochanan says, Bas Kohen Lisrael ein zivugon ola yofe. A Bas Kohen who marries a Yisrael, that means she marries a non-Kohen, their marriage will not have positive results. Mahi, well, what will happen? Om Rav Chista. Rav Chista says, Oy almona, oy grusha, o zera ein la. She will end up being a widow. In other words, the Yisrael husband will die on her, or she will be divorced, or she will bear no children. The Rashi points out, Bas Kohen Sricha Lihinose Lekohanav, Livkon Mishpachta Lihinose Yisrael. There's a a certain understanding or an acceptance that the Kohanim are considered a holy grouping or division amongst the Jewish people. In fact, the Jewish people, in contrast to the nations of idolaters, are referred to in the Torah as a mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. Something that's kadosh is something that's separated. And many times it has a very specific role to fulfill. A kohen is separate from the rest of the people in the sense that there are many halachas, many standards, stringencies that apply to kohanim that don't apply to the rest of the people. So in that sense, they are holier. And again, holiness has to do with not a function necessarily better or worse, but it's a certain type of quality or division that causes this separation. So as a result of this, the expectation is that a Kohen who represents this holy class should marry people of the same background. Namely, a Bas Kohen shouldn't marry out of her fold. She should marry a Kohen. In the event that she steps out of that fold and marries a Yisrael. So we see here, Ein Zivugon Ola Yafet. They won't have Mazel Tov, a good Mazel. And the Gemara enumerated what are the possibilities of that outcome. B'masni Satana, we have a Tanaic source that addresses this issue. It says, Ko Vra O Ko Uvra So. He will either end up burying her before her time, or she will bury him before his time. Oy mevi'oso lidei anius, or this bond where a Bas Kohen marries a Yisrael, that will cause them to become impoverished. Is that really so? Rabbi Yochanan. There is a second comment of Rabbi Yochanan that will seem to contradict that which we just said, and that's why we're calling this Beis, second comment. He says, "Haroitza shi'is asher yidbak bezaro shel Aaron kol shekein shetor ukehuna me'ashrosan." One who seeks wealth should cling unto the offspring of Aaron. In other words, you have a Yisrael that seeks wealth; he should marry a Bas Kohen. Because with that, Torah and Kahuna will cause him to achieve wealth. Now, Kahuna is associated with wealth in the sense, and this you can see a bit more extensively in the Meforshim, and the Marsha points this out, that Yosimu Keter Be'apecha is a source in the Torah that he who offers the ketores, and a Kohen is the one who offered the incense sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash, that by way of the psukim is associated with wealth. So the kahuna brings on wealth. At Torah, Orech Yomim Bimina V'smola Oishe V'chavoid. The pasuk describing Torah mentions that one who is engaged in Torah study is zoche also to Osher, however that is defined. But for our purposes, we're going to take things on we'll call it the superficial level. And all that we see here is that clinging unto the descendants of Aaron, namely Bas Kohen, if a Yisrael wants to achieve Osher, so that's recommended. So how can we be taught just before that Ein Zivugon Ola Yofe, and amongst the things that were taught was he'll come to poverty. Then what says Lo Kasha? There is no distinction. There's no question or contradiction between these two approaches. Ha b'talmud chacham, ha ba'ama oretz. If it's a Yisrael who happens to be a Torah scholar, then the second point of Rabbi Yochanan applies. Then, as his comment said, he's got the kahuna and Torah working for him to have him merit wealth. However, the first comment of Rabbi Yochanan, who said Ein Zivugon Olo Yofe, and we saw that he can come lidei anius, that's be'am ha'oretz. That's where an am ha'oretz marries a Bas Kohen. Then, now we have a new marking on the side under our Mivneh heading. We have a house marking appearing in opposite directions. And these are Chavayot Hafuchot, opposite experiences, Benisuin im Benos Kehanim, with regard to different people that married the daughters of Kehanim. Some are positive, and some are negative. And as we'll see, that with the house pointing up, they represent negative outcomes. With the inverted, then positive. Rabbi Yeshua Nosiv Kahanta. Rabbi Yeshua married a Bas Kohen, Cholash, and he experienced weakness or illness, Omar, and he declared, Lo ni chole la'aron, apparently it's not, it doesn't meet with Aaron's approval, the Advik Bizarre, that I cling unto his offspring, that he should have a son-in-law like me. It would seem that this is an expression of great humility on Rabbi Yeshua's part, but nevertheless, he was associating that his non-Kohen status and his marriage to the Bas Kohen was the cause of his weakness. Rav Ili Bar Ovin, Nosif Kanto, the inverted house shows you that we're going to now see an opposite approach. Rav Ili married a Bas Kohen, Nofku Mine Tre Boni Smichi. He had two sons that were Smichi, that had received approval to serve as legal rulers, to serve as, some today the term people use is a person who gets smicha becomes a rabbi. That is indicative of his role as a legal decisor. So Rav Ili attributes the outcome of having two sons that were accomplished Torah scholars to his marriage to a Bas Kohen. And the sons' names were, as we see, Rav Sheshes, Breder of Edi, and Rav Yeshua, Breder of Edi. Omar of Popo, Ilo Nasiv Nakanta Lo Asri. If I had not married a Bas Kohen, I would not have merited wealth. Omar of Kahana, Ilo Nasiv Nakanta, had I not married a Bas Kohen, Lo Galoi, I wouldn't have been exiled. If you're familiar with the Gemara at the end, toward the end of Bava Kama, so there's a story involving Rav Kahana having to, in order to save his skin, he had to run to the Eretz Yisrael in order to save himself. And that was because of someone who was going to report his having committed an act of murder. Dramatic story. If you want to see more about that, you look in Bava Kama Daf Kuf Yud Zayin. But Rav Kahana says, had I not married a Bas Kohen, I wouldn't have had experienced that whole experience, ending up in my becoming exiled. Omru Lei, those who heard Rav Kahana said, Fala Mokom Torah Golisa, but you ran to a place of Torah study. He had run to Eretz Yisrael and ended up in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yochanan, as the Gemara there in Bava Kama says. So there's no, actually you didn't lose at all by your going into exile, because you ended up being exiled to a Mokom Torah, a place of Torah study. So Rav Kahana answers, Lo galoi kidegoli inshi. I didn't enter exile, in other words, leaving my place as normal people do. Normal golus is something that people on their own decide to do. And they decide to transfer their location. He did so under duress, and that's what he was bemoaning over here. Omer of Yitzchok kolanene misudas horashus l'soiv gele. Anyone who benefits from a meal that's of an optional nature, as opposed to a meal that is associated or commemorating a mitzvah, or in celebration of a mitzvah. So one who benefits from a sudas harashus and will end up finding himself in exile. Shenemar, v'oichlim korem mitzon, v'agolim mitoch marbeik, uksiv, and it says a little bit later, in almost Perek Vav, it says, lochein ato yiglu barosh goylim. So we see a juxtaposition of psukim featuring optional meals and the eventual exile. Tanu Rabbanan. Kol Talmud Chacham Amar B'Sudasa B'Chol Mokoyim. Soif Machrev Es Beso. U'Ma'almein Es Ishto. And a few other things as we go on. However, the source is telling us that Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar who has large meals, Marbe B'Sudasa, he extends his meals B'Chol Mokoyim in many places. Wherever he is, he sits down to big meals. So someone like that is eventually going to machrev es beis. It literally means destroy his house. But if you look in Meforshim, it could very well also refer to a situation of impoverishment. There'll be nothing left in his house because he's so accustomed to eating large meals wherever he is. He'll end up using up all the funds in his household. Uma'almein es ishto. Almein, you can see the word almona there in that word. That means he'll cause his wife to become an almona. Rashi explains here, again, not just translating, but adding another depth of understanding. Rashi says, Uma'almein es ishto. Rashi, you see across from your line, a couple lines up, he says, Shemevakesh limudo. He seeks out his the food that he's accustomed to. We just got finished saying he's accustomed to eating large quantities. The EF share low, and he can't maintain his large food consumption based on his current budget. So what happens? The Gola Limazonos, he then ends up exiling himself for the pursuit of funds. Vare Ishto Ba'amanus Chayas, and leaving his wife behind as if she were a widow. That Chayas means alive. While he's still alive, she is as if she is a widow, being that her husband is away for long stretches of time. Miasim is Gozolov. Gozolov literally are chicks, but it's a reference to his children. And he leaves his children as Yisoimim, as orphans. Again, that can be explained like we did with the Almona. The Talmud Mishtakach, and the Torah learning that he had done, we opened this source saying we're talking about a Talmud Chacham. So the Torah learning that he had done will be forgotten. And Rashi adds, since he's traveling around trying to find funds to support his food habit, he won't be sitting down spending time reviewing his Torah learning. And the association with forgetting your Torah learning with lack of review is what is being suggested here. Umachlokes Rabbi's voice alone, and he becomes the subject of many controversies. And the reason that a lot of controversies arise concerning him, Rashi makes 2 points. Either it's because he forgot his Torah learning, so he ends up saying things that are really not accurate, and that creates a lot of tension, or because he is being sought out for debt payment. As we pointed out, he's mar b'sosu b'chol mokom, so he'll end up not only using up his funds, but having to enter debt in order to support his habit. And people, when they want to collect their money and he doesn't have what to pay, so that causes strife. That's machlokas rabos b'osolov, udvorov einot nishmoyim. And what he says, people will not heed. U'mechalol shem shemayim, and he desecrates the name of the Almighty. V'shem Rabo, v'shem Ovid, the name of his master, the name of his teacher, the name of his father. V'gorim shem ra loy ulevonov ulevnei bonov asiv called us. Person like that brings upon himself, his children, his grandchildren, until the end of generations, a bad name. Mahi, what do you mean by a bad name? So we have a series of answers to explain this, and that's what we've used the double underline marking for. Abaye, Omar Abaye, Korule, they will refer to him as Bar Mochem Tanuri, the expert. Now, it should be pointed out there is a machlokas in the Meforshim. They have Rashi explains here that they will refer to his sons this negative name, and the Marsha explains that the term Bar is like the expression you see elsewhere, Bar Hochi, that means he himself has this characteristic. He is a bar hochi of. It's an expression that's used elsewhere. So a negative name will be referred to either his son or to the fellow himself. So Abaye says it will be called Bar Mecham Tanuri, they'll call his son, according to Rashi, the son of the stove heater. Stove heater, mochim is to heat up the stoves. He is someone that's always eating, wherever he is, so he's always going to be involved in firing up stoves. Rava Omar, Bar Market Beikuvi, he'll be referred to as the pub dancer. And the Rashi explains, Market Beikuvi, Kedera Haleitzonem, Shem Mesachakim, Umaratin, Bechonuyas, Ashkoisun, Beshichron. People that dance in pubs in order to be close to the liquor and imbibe more and more in their state of intoxication. And Rav Popo Omar, Bar Machich Pinchi, be called the son of the plate licker, one who licks the plate clean. Rav Shmaya Omar, Bar Moch Rova, he will be called the son of the one who folds up his coat and sleeps on it wherever he is found. Rashi explains that people who become drunk, as a person like this is, he doesn't have enough sobriety in him to get home to lie on his bed. So what he does is he folds up his coat and sleeps on that as a pillow, using it as a pillow wherever he is. So all of these descriptions are appropriate to the a person who is mar b'sudasa b'chol mokom, and as we said, it can lead to a situation of impoverishment and debts and drunkenness and all that we explained. Tonu Rabbanan, and we have a series of sources that we've used a bow tie marking. So on the side of the Gemara there were no say mivne heading mekoros b'shevach nisuin in bas talmud chacham. These will be praises or praiseworthy actions in order to achieve the marriage with the daughter of a Talmud Chacham. So the source says, the Oilam Yimkor Odom Kol Mashi Yeshlo, a person should, even if it comes to it, he should sell all his wares, the Yisa Bas Talmud Chacham, and marry the daughter of a Talmud Chacham. Well, what's the benefit of marrying the daughter of a Talmud Chacham? She may, so Gila, if the husband dies or he ends up being exiled, what happens with the wife and kids? So muftachlo shebonav tamidei chachamim, he is insured that his children will become tamidei chachamim, because inevitably she, the woman, the mother, will take her children to her father's house. Therefore, a man benefits by marrying the daughter of a Talmud Chacham. The al yisa bas amaras, a person should not marry the daughter of an ignoramus. Shemei segila bonav amaratzim, if he should die or be sent into exile, so where will his sons go? They'll go to his wife's father, to his father-in-law, who is an amaratz, and the negative impact will be manifest in his children. Tanu Rabbanan, the Olam Yimkor Odom Kol Ma Shiyeshlo V'Yiso Bas Talmud Chacham V'Yasi Bito L'Talmud Chacham. Person should, once, as we said before, he should, if it comes to it, he should sell all his wares in order that he can marry the daughter of a Talmud Chacham, and likewise be able to marry his daughter to a Talmud Chacham. Moshal Le'Inve HaGefen Be'Inve HaGefen Davar No'eh U'Miskabel. Here's an analogy presented by the Gemara. Rashi does not elaborate on this. The Marshal just touches on the analogy a bit. And there's an analogy to the grapes of a vine. Now, there are many praiseworthy statements that are made in Psukim and in Chazal regarding a vine. So when you have the marriage of these two proper individuals to one another, then it's considered like a combination of grapes with grapes. Or it could be that there's an analogy here to the grafting of one vine onto another vine. Whichever way, it's a type of combination that is positive, that has a positive ring to it, and that's what is meant, dover noe, pleasant, umiskabel, and it's accepted on the part of the public.
V'lo yisah bas amoretz, a person should avoid marrying the daughter of an ignoramus. Moshal le'inve ha-gefen be'inve ha-sneh. It's similar to combining grapes from a vine with the berries of a sneh, type of lowly bush. Dover ka'ur v'einoi, at the top of Omed Beis, v'eino miskabel. The Marshal points out that the analogy to the vine is based on the posuk in Tehillim, Eshtecha kegefen haporia, that the woman who bears children is compared to a vine producing many clusters of grapes. So if we tie these different ideas together, one who marries the daughter of a Talmud Chacham, as we saw before, that serves as a type of insurance policy to benefit one's children, one's offspring. We continue at the top line of Omid Beis, Tonu Rabbonon, Li'olo Mimkor Odom, Kol Ma Shiyeshlo, V'yisa Bas Talmud Chacham. In this source, we are going to see a gradation or a hierarchy, if you will, of whom to choose as your mate. And we will be proceeding in a descending order. Like, first choice is the Yisal Bas Talmud Chacham, the daughter of a Torah scholar. However, Lo Motza Bas Talmud Chacham, if a person doesn't find such a mate, Yisal Bas Gedolei Hador. And here, you have an interesting phenomenon where a common contemporary expression means something in common jargon other than that which it means in the Gemara. So the term Gedolei Hador in the Gemara means the Bas Gedolei Hador is the daughter of pious men who are exceptional in their Maisa. Rashi said, Anshei Maisa, people of action, and are righteous. In common jargon, the term Gedolei Hador is a reference to the leading Torah scholars. But in this source, we see Torah scholars were already mentioned as the first choice. So Gedolei Hador is something else. Lo Motza Bas Gedolei Hador, if a person doesn't find the daughter of the Gedolei Hador, Yisa Bas Roshei Knesios. Roshei Knesios are heads of communities. Lo Motza Bas Roshei Knesios, if a person doesn't find such a mate, then Yisal Bas Gaboi Tzedakah. He should marry the daughter, or seek out in marriage the daughter of a Gaboi Tzedakah, a person who is appointed to oversee the collection and distribution of charity. Rashi adds, a person in that position is honest and good and trustworthy. And therefore, it's a type of family that one would want to seek out. Lo motza bas gaboi tzedakah, a person doesn't find the daughter of those in charge of the communal or of the charity funds, yisa bas malamdei tinoko. So he should seek out in marriage the daughter of an elementary school teacher, an elementary teacher who teaches young kids Torah, the Chumash teacher. Those are the Malamdei Tinoikas. The Lo Yisa Bas Am Horetz. Now, the double underline that you see used on this Omid, and there are quite a few double underlined expressions, they are expressions of Am Horetz. And these are all, but we say on the side of the Gemara, the same Mivneh heading that we have, the topic heading Mivneh is the structural note. We indicate that the double underline is Beginus Am Horetz, negative statements concerning the ignoramuses. The Gemara continues, the lo yisobas am amehoras, person should not marry the daughters of ignoramuses, mitnei shehein sheketz unishosehem sheretz the albinosein hu omer orur shochev im kol behema. These are very derogatory and denigrating statements. But the Jewish people are known as the people of the book, and we encourage every Jew. What's beautiful about Judaism is that no one Jew has what we call a monopoly on Torah study. As
the expression appears elsewhere. The Torah munachas bekeren zoves kol harotze lavo yitol. The Torah is lying in the corner of the room, so to speak. It's up for anyone to go and grab it. And therefore, a person who maintains a state of ignorance of Torah has no one to blame other than himself. There are nowadays, fortunately, there are so many different ways to achieve Torah knowledge which didn't exist in the past, where, as we are studying now, just at the click of a button on a machine, you can be exposed to troves and troves of Torah knowledge, where, as we said, it's just a click away, and you're already entering the world of Torah study. Therefore, there is room to, even though one might say it's not politically correct to speak in the terms that we see here, but the Torah is not preoccupied with political correctness, it's preoccupied with truth. So here you see that the Torah, the Gemara, is referring to the Amorites as Shekets, and their wives are Sherets, all types of creatures that are we'll call undesirable. Rashi says, "Nishosam Sheret She'enon Zehiros B'Mitzvos." They're not careful with mitzvah performance. And regarding the daughters of Amoratsim, it says, "Orur Shochev Imkol Behema." Literally, cursed be the one that sleeps with any kind of animal. Rashi, on the third line from the top, says, "Im kol behema shedomos lebehema." They are like animals. She'ein lohen leiv lahavin. They don't have the means of understanding things. So, with that in mind, we should see this as an incentive or a source of motivation to exit the realm of Amoratsis and become Talmidei Chachamim. And for all of those who are listening to a Daf Yomi Shir, so all I can say is that you're on the right track. Tanya, Rebbe Omer, Amoratz Osur Lechol Bosar. An ignoramus is not allowed to eat meat. Shinemar, based on the Pasuk, it says, Zos Toiras HaBehemah V'Oif. And from this we darshan, kol oisek b'Torah, he was engaged in Torah study, mutar lechol basar behema v'oif. He is entitled to eat these creatures, behema or animals, and oif, birds. V'chol she'eino oisek b'Torah, person who is not engaged in Torah study, osur lechol basar behema v'oif. He is not entitled to eating them. And again, there's an allusion here to the fact that a person who lacks Torah study is, as we just saw before, he himself is like a behemoth. So what right does he have to exert his supremacy over animals, slaughtering them and eating them? If, however, one is a Talmud Chacham, so the Torah gives license, permission, if you will, for him to eat behemoth and oif. Omar Rebbe Elazar. Here you can see we have a diamond used to highlight Maimros of Rebbe Elazar. Amoretz mutar lenoichroi b'yom hakipurim shechalios b'shabbos. This is an incredibly harsh statement, but it's as we who are believing Jews. The Torah is, as we said a moment ago, is telling things the way they are, not mincing any words, and that's one of the beauties of the Torah, that when you're learning it, you know you are learning absolute truth. Rebbe Elazar says that when it comes to your dealings, when it comes to an Amoretz, one is allowed to kill him. Lenochro is a form of killing that is killing other than through slaughtering. Slaughtering is called shechita. Nochro could be something like piercing his heart. Now, as far as to take this literally, that is already another story. That one has to look into the Meforshim to discover more on this topic. But as far as
an attitude that one might have that certainly is being communicated by Reb Elozer, that if one encounters an Amoritz, one is allowed to kill him, even if it's on Yom Kippur that falls out on Shabbos. In other words, it's like the maximum day of holiness and restriction with regard to Malachas. However, the Amoritz is viewed as someone that is a threat. And we say, Habal lahorgecha hashkem lahorgo, someone who is a threat to you, you can eliminate him before he eliminates you. So Reb Elozer says, that is how you deal with an Amoritz. Amru lo Tamidov, the Tamidim of Reb Elozer said, Rebbe, emor l'shochata, why do you use the expression l'nocharo? Why not say it's mutter to kill him through shechita? Amar lehem, ze to'un brocha, v'ze eino to'un brocha. Before one does the act of shechita, shechita is known as ritual slaughter. A brocha is made. There is a certain level of holiness, of importance associated with shechita, in so far as that it requires a brocha. Nechira is simple killing of an animal, as opposed to ritual slaughter. That doesn't need a bracha, and the Amoritz, so to speak, doesn't deserve to be killed in a way that would otherwise necessitate a bracha. Of course, we're not talking about a bracha over killing people, but it's the idea behind the method of killing known as shechita is too important, so to speak, to waste on an Amoritz. Omar Reb Elozer, Amoritz osur lislavois imoi baderech. It is forbidden to accompany an Amoritz on the road. In other words, if one is walking, and often it's good to have company with you, it serves as a means of safety as well, he should not seek out the company of an Amoritz, shenemar, and as the Pasuk says, then we have a Pasuk here that refers to Torah study. It says, "Kihi chayecho ve'urech yomecho." The Torah is a means of preserving one's own life. If one wants to live a good, long life, so he should engage in Torah study. Now, an Amoritz has made the decision not to study Torah, so he's not interested in his own life. Al chayov lochos, he isn't concerned with his own life. Al chaye chavero lo kol shekein, when it comes to the next person's life, all the more so, he will have no concern, and therefore there is room for suspicion that he might end up killing you. Therefore, Reb Elozer concludes that one is not to be accompanied by an Amoritz, be alone with an Amoritz on the road. Omer Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Amoritz mutter lekoro kedag. In the same spirit as Reb Elozer, a few lines above, he says an Amoritz is mutter to rip him open like a fish. Amar of Shmuel bar Yitzchak, u mi gabo, and make sure you rip him open from his back. Rashi says the sulo chai, that way he won't continue living. And Rashi gives more background to that from the Gemara in Chulin. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Akiva. And now we have a very dramatic presentation, that of Rabbi Akiva, who himself was on both sides of the fence. Kishoyisi Amoritz, Omarti. And this insight will help understand the seeming, called harshness, that we saw above in terms of how to deal with Amoratzim. Rabbi Akiva testifies about himself. He says, when I was an Amoritz, Omarti, I announced, Mi yitein li talmud chochem v'anashchenu kechamor, who would only give me a talmud chochem and I will bite him like a donkey. Omru lo tamidov, Rebbe, emor ki kelev, why do you choose the donkey as your method or your means of biting? Why not say I would bite him like a dog? Omar lehen, ze noishech v'shover etzem. The donkey, when it bites, it has that kind of a bite with a tremendous amount of jaw pressure that crushes bones. the dog bites, but it doesn't crush bones in its bite. So that what Rabbi Akiva was saying, I wanted to inflict on the Talmud Chacham maximum damage. So you can see Rabbi Akiva himself is testifying that the nature of Amaratzim is to seek the destruction and the pain upon Talmidei Chachamim. Therefore, as we saw before, one should take preemptive measures if necessary. Again, we said before, and we have to say this by way of we'll call partial disclaimer, as far as what is really meant above is to be researched in the Meforshim, Mutar L'Nochro or Koro Kedag, etc. Tanya, Hoya Rabbi Meir Omer, Kol Hamasi Bito Lamoretz, anyone who marries his daughter off to an ignoramus, Kilu Kofsa Umanicho Lefnei Ari. It's as if he's binding her and placing her in front of a lion. Ma Ari Dores V'Ochel V'Ein Lo Boshes Ponim, just like a lion, it tramples its prey and eats it. In fact, the word dores has a connotation that it eats its prey while the victim is still alive. The different animals in the animal kingdom have different approaches to their prey. In the case of certain animals, the term dores is used, indicating it eats it starts to dismember it and peel away its flesh while it's still alive. And that's the nature of an ari, of a lion. And it has no anal boshes upon him. It's not has no sense of shame to it. Af amoret, so too the ignoramus when engaging in intimacy, make uboyo, he'll hit his wife and he'll engage in an act of be'ilah's intimacy, the ein lo boishes ponim, and he'll do so without any shame. So if a person has any consideration for his daughter's dignity and welfare, he will seek out a Talmud Chacham as her mate. Tanya, Rabbi Lezer Omer, il mole onu tzrifim lohem, lamasu maton, if we, the Talmud Chacham, were not necessary for the Amaratzim, because we are part of the business chain, if you will. They need us to be their customers for their wares. So they need us for their businesses. Hoyu horginosan, if we weren't needed, they would kill us. Again, as we said before, with that in mind, the Amaratzim have murderous intentions with regard to Talmidei Chachamim. Therefore, Habor lo horgecho hashkein v'horgo, as we saw earlier. Toni Rabbi Chiya, kol oisik b'torah lefnei am oretz, anyone who engages in Torah study in the presence of an ignoramus, kilu boyel arusoso b'fonov, it's as if he conducts intimacy with the man's wife. Shenemar, and the idea of boyel arusoso b'fonov is you are causing him embarrassment. Shenemar, Torah tzivolonu Moshe moirosha, that's a pasuk which obviously features the Torah. Al tikri morosha, don't read the word as morosha, ela maorosa, that the Torah is considered one's wife, so that the person in his approach to Torah, it's parallel to a marriage, so that the Torah is really an entity that everyone is expected to marry. So if you have someone that is not engaging in the Torah study, and someone who is, in other words, you have a Talmud Chacham, or someone who is engaged in Torah study in front of someone who refuses to study the Torah, and the Torah was supposed to be the Am Oretz's wife, so it's considered as if you are embarrassing him, as we just described. Gedola Sino Shesoinin Am Oretz Talmud Chacham, and here is an incredibly dramatic statement, especially for the collective Jewish people, and we will see how intense the hatred of Amaratzim is toward Talmidei Chachamim. Greater is the hatred of Amaratzim toward Talmidei Chachamim, Yoser Misinah Shesoinim Oivdei Chachamim Es Yisrael, greater than the hate that idol worshippers have toward the Jewish people. Now, the Jewish people are the victim of years and years of what's known commonly as anti-Semitism. The hatred, the unexplained, if you will, the unfettered hatred of Gentiles toward Jews. And that hatred has led to major catastrophes for the Jewish people over the years, all coming from hatred. That being the case, imagine, or just try to envision what is being said in this source, that greater than that level of hatred is the hatred that the ignoramuses, and ignoramuses themselves are Jewish people, that they have toward those who are Torah scholars. Unashosam Yosemehen, and the wives of the Amoratsims, their hatred toward Talmid Chacham is even greater. Tana, and we have another teaching, it says, Shona Upiresha, a person who studied Torah, but then left the fold, he left the track, he got off track, he departed from Torah. He studied, but then departed. Yoyser Mikom, his hatred toward Talmidei Chachamim is greater than all the above mentioned. The Rashi says the reason for that is he knows how much disdain Talmidei Chachamim have toward Amoratsim. Being that he studied Torah, he knows that. And therefore, his hatred toward the Talmidei Chachamim will be even greater. Tonu Rabbonon, Shisha Dvarim Nemru Ba'amei Haaretz. There are 6 points made in conjunction with Amoratsim. Ein Moisrim Lahem Edus. Literally, don't give over to them topics or matters of testimony. That would mean if, let's say, you need someone to witness an event, to eventually testify about a particular event, you don't invite an ignoramus to be that witness. V'ein mekablin meimenu edus, and we don't accept from them their testimony. V'ein megalin lahen sod, nor do we reveal to them secrets. If you have something that you want to remain private, you don't reveal that information, don't share that information with an Am Haaretz. V'ein memanin oison apotropos al yesom, nor do we appoint them to be executors over the estates of orphans, because they are suspect of theft. V'ein memanin oison apotropos al kupa shel tzedaka. Likewise, we wouldn't appoint an Am Haaretz to be an overseer of a public charity fund. V'ein mislavin imoen bederach, nor would we accompany them on the road. And we saw that in the second diamonded statement of Rebbe Lozer above. V'ei shomrim af ein machrizin al avedosu. Another opinion. In other words, this is after we saw 6 points made by the Tanakhama, the Yeshomrim represents another Tanaic opinion. Adds, he says, Af ein machrizin al avedoso. If a lost article of an Amoratz is found, so no announcement is made concerning his lost article, so that the Amoratz in effect will not be able to retrieve or recover his lost item. The Tanakhama, well, the Tanakhama doesn't mention that. In other words, according to the Tanakhama, if an Amoretz loses something, you will announce it, and enabling him, the Amoretz, to recover his article. So why does the Tanakhama not share the opinion of the Yeshomrim? Answer, Zimnin denofik minei zara malya. There are times that that from an Amoretz there will be zara malya, positive children will issue forth from him. The Ochile, and the child who might grow up to be a Talmud Chacham, if his father recovers his lost items, eventually the Talmud Chacham offspring will be the heir to that. Shinemar Yochin Vitzadik Hilbash. The Pusik describes the Rasha, the evil one, prepares things, and the son who's a tzaddik will wear it, will benefit from it. so that according to the Tanakhama, who mentioned six items, not including the Ein Machriz and Alvedoso, he takes this into consideration, that it's better for the Amoritz to recover his lost item, because that will then enable his offspring that will be positive to inherit it. At this point, we're quoting from the Mishnah that describes someone who left Yerushalayim and he found that he had some sacrificial meat in his possession. When we look at the Mishnah, there were quantities. The Rabbi Meir said that the quantities are the halachas in the Mishnah about the chometz and the burning of the basar kochim. The sacrificial meat is based on an egg quantity, and Rabbi Yehuda placed emphasis on the olive quantity. So the Gemara asks, "Lemeimer de Rabbi Meir savar kebetzu de choshev, Rabbi Yehuda savar kezayis nami choshev." Are we saying that according to Rabbi Meir, only once you achieve an egg quantity is there chashivas, is there importance? And Rabbi Yehuda is saying that even if it's the smaller olive quantity, that represents chashivas. The Romini, we raise a contradiction from another source where we find just the opposite. Ad kamo hein mezamnin. This source comes from the laws of Birchas Hamazon. If you have three people that ate a meal together, then no one of them is allowed to depart from the group until they have the group Birchas Hamazon recitation, known as a zimun. So how much would they need to have eaten in order for them to be, we'll call, locked in to their zimun, into their group? So the first opinion is ad kezayis. If they ate an olive quantity of bread, then he must wait for the others before departing the group. Must wait for the others so that they can say the Birchas Hamazon together in the zimun format. For Rabbi Yehuda, Omer ad kebetza. Rabbi Yehuda says that only if they had eaten an egg quantity of bread would they be locked into this group Birchas Hamazon format. Well, very simply, we see Rabbi Yehuda saying kebetza, and in our Mishnah we saw Rabbi Yehuda emphasizing kezayis. And as far as the first opinion in this source, which we take to represent Rabbi Meir, he says kezayis, when in the Mishnah Rabbi Meir emphasized a kebetza. Omer Rabbi Yochanan muchlefes ashitas. Rabbi Yochanan says, so you have to switch them around so that they align with one another. Abaye Omar liolam lo tepuch. Abaye says there's no need to switch them around. Really, you're dealing with different topics. Hasam bekroy pligi, hacha besvara pligi. There, in the case of the Birchas Hamazon and the Zimun, there is a pasuk that is the source of controversy, and each one, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, have their own approach to that pasuk. Here, hacha, in the case of the burning of the kochim, their machlokas is based on a svar, on a something of a logical nature. The Gemara now explains hasam in the case of the zimun bekroi pliki. The machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda surrounds how to understand a pasuk. Rabbi Meir savar, the pasuk regarding Birchas Hamazon says v'yochalta v'savato v'rachtos Hashem Elokecha. V'yochalta is the pasuk is broken down to each word. What does it teach me? V'yochalta zu achila v'savata zu shtia. The word v'yochalta is a reference to eating. Savata is a reference to drinking. V'achila equals because I said we know as a part of an oral tradition that where the Torah makes reference to achila, the minimum amount that constitutes achila is an olive quantity. So having said in the pasuk v'yochalta, I understand that that Birchas Hamazon necessitates an olive quantity. Rabbi Yehuda Savar, V'yochalta V'savata. He doesn't break the two words apart, but he reads them together. V'yochalta V'savata means achila shiesh bosvia. That it could be that for other areas of halacha, for example, the prohibition of eating chelev or nevela, that would be an olive quantity. But here the pasuk doesn't say just achila. It says achila together with savata. Savata means satisfaction. So according to Rabbi Yehuda and his approach to the pasuk, being that achata is combined with v'savata, in according to Rabbi Yehuda, it indicates achilo sheyesh bo svia, the what type of eating generates the birchas hamazon obligation. That's an achila that has accompanying it satisfaction. Ve'ezo, what is that? Zu bekevetza. That's if he eats an egg quantity. Less than an egg quantity doesn't produce satisfaction. So as far as the machloikis, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, in the realm of birchas hamazon, each one has their own approach to the pasuk. Hacha b'svara pligi. Here, in the case of our Mishnah, the topic of going back when you discover that you have besar kochim, or in the case of the chometz, the Rabbi Meir sovar chazarosu ketum osay. The need to return the quantity that demands your return. That is ketum also, like the quantity that is associated with food impurity. Ma tumas bekebet. So just like tumas oichlin is only if you have a kebet. So in other words, for food to be able to generate tuma, to project tuma onto something else, you need to have an egg quantity of food. So Rabbi Meir is saying that the rules of return are like the rules of tuma. So just like ma tumaso bekebetza, af chazaroso bekebetza. Rabbi Yehuda Savar, chazaroso, and here we continue at the top of Daf Nun Amud Aleph. The law of return concerning the meat and the chometz is ke'isuro, as its prohibition, as the quantity associated with its prohibition. Ma isuro bekezayas, just like the isur, you know, you cannot eat how much chometz, how much an olive quantity, an olive quantity of chometz on Pesach would result in a Torah level chometz violation. Af chazaroso, so too the rules of return are based on that quantity. So there's a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Buda. How do you establish the rules of the rule of the mission of needing to go back? Is it based on, do you parallel chazora to tuma, or do you parallel chazora to isur, to prohibition? Tanya, Rabbi Nosson Omer, zeh v'zeh k'shtei beitzim. Rabbi Nosson is a unique shita. He says that the law of return to go back home to burn chometz and to go back to Yerushalayim to burn to go back to the bira, to burn the kochim meat, is if you have a quantity of two eggs in quantity. V'loi hodu lo chomet. The chomet did not agree with Rabbi Nosson. Before we conclude, let us just remind you that if you would like to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.